Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and of course Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are The Invite, Shipwrecked, Nightmare at Sea, and Amores Perros.
Olivia Wilde is turning into a pretty good movie director, and she is also a pretty good actor, and she does both of those things in her new movie, The Invite, which has a really, really good cast. It's a small cast. This is what they call in the business sometimes a four-hander. There's only four characters, and you don't even see anybody else in the distance. It's just these four people, and they are played by Olivia Wilde and Seth Rogen and Penelope Cruz and Edward Norton. And they're all good actors, and they all do a good job in this movie, which, again, is quite nicely directed, very snappy. I found the movie, it's ironic that it's called The Invite. It overstays its welcome a little bit, I think. Goes on a bit too long, gets a bit too silly in the later part of it. But it's a pretty good film and one of the better comedies that I've seen in a while now. So what we have here is a couple played by Seth Rogen and Olivia Wilde. And they live in an apartment and they have some neighbors who they've only met very casually, like in the elevator and stuff like that. So Seth Rogen, his name is Joe, by the way, and Olivia Wilde's character's name is Angela. He comes home after what for him was a tough day. He had trouble riding his bike home and his back hurts and he's got to lie on the floor and stuff like that. And then he discovers that Angela, his wife, has invited these neighbors over for dinner that very night. And he complains, why didn't you consult me about this? And she says, I did. We talked about it. And they start bickering. Now, there used to be a radio show before my time, many, many, many decades ago, called The Bickersons. Well, this movie, in a way, is like The Bickersons, I suppose, because it has a lot of this bickering. So this couple, Joe and Angela, they bicker. They bicker over the neighbors coming. They bicker over why she didn't tell him or why she did tell him and he didn't remember and things like that. And his back hurts and he's unhappy. And she's now very angry about the whole thing. And she's cooking a souffle and it's not going to come out right, you know, that sort of thing. Then these neighbors who they only knew casually show up as they're supposed to for dinner, played by Penelope Cruz. Her character's name is Pina, and Edward Norton plays a character whose name is Hawk, although that name comes in for a little gentle ribbing over the course of the film. Pina and Hawk show up, and they seem like nice people, and they, for the two couples, the four people start interacting with one another, and that's when the movie really launches into its real material. So we have here a movie which I think for a comedy is fairly real in the way it portrays people. I found the bickering between Joe and Angela to be quite realistic. I believed it. I believed that these were real people who really had this kind of relationship. And Pina and Hawk are a little bit less clearly defined, but when we get to settle into them a little bit, they seem to be, again, reasonably believable characters. Hawk, interestingly, played by Edward Norton, is a retired firefighter. And as Joe observes, firefighters are supposed to be big and burly, and you're not really that. But, you know, the movie kind of accounts for that a little bit. And actually, Edward Norton does look pretty bulked up for this role, so it's believable. And, of course, Penelope Cruz as Pina is gorgeous as ever and a good actor, so that's fine also. So these characters start interacting, and then we get up to what I don't really want to reveal because it's fairly late in the film and this would be a major spoiler, but let me just say that it turns out that Pina and Hawk, the neighbors, have a sort of a hidden agenda which they then spring on Joe and Angela. And I'll just go this far to point in the direction of what this big twist in the plot is that one thing that Joe is always complaining about is one of the things he bickers about with Angela is that the upstairs neighbors make too much noise when they're having sex. And Angela says, "Whatever you do, don't mention that." And he says, "No, I'm going to bring it up tonight. I'm going to talk to them about it. They're coming for dinner. Okay, I don't even want them to come to dinner. They're coming. This is my opportunity to bring that up." And she gets very upset about that. And he tries to bring it up during the dinner, and Angela gets upset, and then he doesn't quite get to do it, etc. But it turns out to be connected with that, this somewhat hidden agenda that Pina and Hawk have, which then comes out and becomes the sort of focus of the later part of the movie. I never had much interest in Seth Rogen until that recent series of his on TV, The Studio. And I discovered then that he is a really good and skilled and really excellent comic actor. And he's just fine in this movie. But everybody else is just fine too. Olivia Wilde, again, who also directed the movie, does really well as Angela. And you sort of can't go wrong with Penelope Cruz and Edward Norton. They're very, very good as the others as well. So it's a well-acted movie. And I have to say, the directing, which I've praised more than once so far, one of the things about it is that it has a lot of really snappy editing, which often sort of enhances the snappy back and forth ping pong-like bickering that goes on. So we have voices going one after another, sometimes all at once, and we have the camera cutting around a lot, really, really, really rapidly during these times. And it's not a sophisticated cinematic device, it's a rather ordinary cinematic device, but it is well handled here. So we have a movie where the editing and the camera work really sort of brings out and enhances the dialogue that's going on, which is often very snappy and quick and fast dialogue. So that's effective too. So I'm not claiming The Invite is a comedy for the ages. But again, it's a pretty darn good movie comedy. I had a good time watching it, and a really, really good cast. And we only have these four people. And well, it's nice to see them all doing a splendid job as a quartet on the screen. Now, for something completely different, a documentary. It is a Netflix documentary, so it's streaming, it's easy to find. It is called Shipwrecked: Nightmare at Sea. It was directed by Chiara Massimino. And it is very, very much about a shipwreck and about a whole lot of very, very scary moments that a lot of people underwent. This documentary is about a shipwreck that took place back in 2012. So it was a number of years ago, but not that long ago. And it was about a ship called the Costa Concordia, an Italian cruise ship. And it hit a rock and it started to go down. It was near Italy. And one of the people in the crew asked the captain if they could sort of do a ride by the town where this crew member was from. And the captain said, okay. And apparently the ship was just a lot too close to the island, and the ship hit a rock and started to go down. So, okay, that sounds like the kind of thing that could happen. And it's a terrible, terrible thing. And then all kinds of chaos ensued. But it turns out that there were some really crazy things that seemed to exacerbate this tragedy to make it into not just a shipwreck, but a real, real, real tragedy. One big question is, how did this happen? Why did this happen? What was going on with the captain of the ship? Well, apparently there was some real miscommunication that went on. We hear at one point, and this is not from the original recordings, it's not from the black box or something like that. This is recreated dialogue where everybody is speaking in English, but we're hearing what we are told the people originally said. The captain is saying to the officer in charge of the steering, port, 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 go to the port. And the officer in charge of the steering is saying, starboard, starboard, going to starboard. And the captain says, port, port. And the other officer says, starboard, starboard. And it takes them several seconds to get that straightened out. And according to the movie, it's very possible that if that little miscommunication, I don't mean little in terms of impact, I mean little in terms of time, if that had not taken place, maybe the whole tragic part of this would have been averted. But anyway, apparently that kind of thing was to blame. Then another kind of thing that happened is that the captain apparently was just not frank with the passengers, didn't really tell what was going on. There were offers of help from shore, from the Coast Guard. The captain said, no, we don't need it. We're going to be okay. That was wrong. And then telling the passengers, it's an electrical failure. Don't worry. Stay where you are. Pretty soon we're going to get everything right again and everything will be okay. Well, the passengers realized pretty soon the ship is starting to tilt way over to one side. People have to now stand in the walls instead of standing on the floor because the ship is so far over. So they're not being told what's really going on. So that is what this movie is about. book. It's about these miscommunications. It's about these just dishonest things being told to them over the ship's announcement system. And it's about the ship going down and down and down. And then people have to get into the lifeboats. And that causes another whole bunch of chaos. We hear from one couple who was on one of the lifeboats, and it starts to go down toward the water. And then it just crashes into the side of the ship because the ship has listed over so far by that time. So that kind of thing goes on as well. Now, the movie consists, in the first part of it especially, of a whole lot of talking heads, various people, not an enormous number of them, but several people who were actually on the ship when all this happened. Some of them were passengers who just wanted to have a lovely cruise. Some of them are crew members who actually worked there. We have a lot of interview with them, especially at the beginning of the film, but they reappear over the course of the film. But then more and more actual footage, taken by people on their phones and so forth and so on, takes over the film. And we see an enormous amount of this. And it is very, very harrowing. You can really imagine what it must have been like to actually be there. It turns out that the rock cut a gouge of almost 175 feet in the hull of the boat. So no wonder the ship was going over. And again, the captain was just saying things which apparently should not have been said. Now, I mentioned before that we're hearing stuff on the soundtrack, which is not from the original black box or anything like that. By the way, the black box from the ship was recovered, but it turned out to be faulty, and they had to bring in a computer expert to reconstruct what actually happened technically during the sinking of the ship. In any case, what we hear on the soundtrack are translated recreations of what was said on the announcements, what was said on people's cell phones and things like that. And it's just not clear that these are really accurate. For example, it probably wasn't just as simple as the captain saying port and the other officer saying starboard. It was probably a little bit more complicated than that, a little bit more mistranslation, maybe misunderstanding, a language barrier, something like that. So we're not really getting the full 100% clear story of what happened in this documentary. And of course, on the internet already, there are various people who are saying, here are things that the documentary leaves out. That said, the documentary gives what I think is a reasonably clear and reasonably honest account of what it was really like to be on a ship that sinks at sea, not far off. They're very close to that island. People say, oh, it couldn't be too bad. Look, there's land right there. But it turned out to be very, very dire. A number of people died, more than 30 people died, and more than 150 people were injured, some of them quite seriously. So again, it was a real nightmare at sea, as the subtitle of this movie suggests. And it's a pretty vivid, harrowing Netflix documentary to watch. If you can handle it, I recommend it. I think it was pretty engrossing. And finally, an older movie from way, way back in 2000, Amores Perros, a very, very highly honored Mexican movie directed by Alejandro Gutierrez Iñárritu. And he has become a very, very important director. This was his first one, his first feature film, at least. And it became the first in what he called his trilogy of death. And this movie is very much about death. Now, the title in Spanish, Amores Perros, again, this is a Mexican movie, is often translated as Love's a Bitch. And I think that's a pretty good translation. It's a three-part story, three-part movie, I should say. But the three different stories are united by a car crash. Fittingly enough, Gutierrez Iñárritu's next movie was called Crash. In any case, there's a car crash that takes place, and that is what sets the whole three stories into motion. The first story, and this is my big warning now, the movie is called Amores Perros. It has love and dogs in the title. If you are a dog lover, this is not a movie for you, because the first of the three interrelated story deals very, very graphically with dog fighting. And the movie was very controversial because of that when it came out in 2000. The movie's won all sorts of awards, and it's a very, very well-made movie. But my gosh, I am a dog lover, and I found some of that dog fighting stuff in the first third of the movie to be very, very difficult to watch. But there it is. And apparently, dog fighting is a real underground feature of life in Mexico City. So there it is in the movie. Anyway, part of the movie, the first story, centers on some lowlifes who are very much involved with dogfighting. The second part lightens up a little bit. It's about some upscale people who have a very lovely new apartment that they live in. There are a couple who love each other. They just recently gotten together and they have this great place to live. However, there's a problem. There's a hole in the floor, and then their dog disappears through the hole in the floor. And he's a cute little cuddly dog. He's not a dogfighting kind of dog. So, okay, he's down there and they can't seem to get him out. And from that stem all kinds of consequences, some of which are very harrowing and tragic for the people involved, and in fact, for the dog involved as well. And along the way, we occasionally see during these first two stories, this homeless person who is out on the street, he turns out to be a paid hitman who is trying to pull off an assassination, and he gets drawn into various things, all of which relates to a car crash that we see at the beginning of the film. So, Amores Perros, it's been back in theaters, it's been restored in glorious 4K, and now it's streaming, and you can see it. And it's a highly honored movie from 2000. It's a very, very well-made movie, one of the early films that really brought attention to Gael Garcia Bernal. So people who love him might want to see this movie. But if you're a dog lover, don't watch the first approximately hour of it because it is full of dog fighting, and I found that pretty darn tough to take. So that is my partly harrowing story this week.
For which we thank you, as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films The Invite, Shipwrecked, Nightmare at Sea, and Amores Perros.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.